What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Mind Over Macros podcast. As always, I am your host, Mike Milner, and today we are going to tackle the macro side of Mind Over Macros. I'm talking a lot about mindset, although we've mixed in some nutrition stuff, some metabolism stuff, but today it's all about macros. So I know that a lot of you appreciate the macro side of Mind Over Macros. Some of you probably don't. It doesn't matter if you're tracking or not. This is useful. Remember, I don't care about being valid. I don't care about being right. I just want to be useful. I just want to be helpful. If I am helping you, or if I am useful to you in any way, it would mean the world to me if you would share. Just let me know. Send me a message on Instagram. That's the best way to do it. The handle is @coach_Mike_Milner. And you can just send me a DM and say, hey, I found this to be really useful, or I really appreciated this episode, whatever it is. Just send a message. Let me know. You can also leave a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. I'm trying to get this show to rank higher and higher. We are growing. The numbers are improving. There's a lot of positive signs right now, and I expect that to continue. And I appreciate all of the support and all of the help. But as it stands right now, I don't know of a better way. If you guys, anybody out there is a podcast expert and you know of a better way to grow the show, that way I don't have to say leave a 5-star rating review every episode. I am all ears. I would love to hear it. So we're going to talk a little bit about macros and probably a little different angle than you're expecting, but I like to leave the suspense. And before I get into that, I just have to comment on an observation. Just, you know how fascinated I am by human behavior and things that I see in patterns in people and just the way that our brains work. And there's a couple examples, couple observations that came up recently that just, it's just interesting. There's no other point for me sharing this other than it fascinates me. So I feel like there's this divide, and I'm not really sure what creates it. The divide is between people who are action takers and people who are procrastinators, excuse makers, you know, sit on the fence people, delay. It's not the right time. I'll do it later. And it's really interesting because I'm not sure what creates that divide. I used to be the excuse maker, but now I feel like I'm more of an action taker. So it can change. I guess you can go back and forth, but it really is fascinating to me because the first example was the Shred with Eminem challenge that we're doing with Emma Montgomery. We had limited spots available, and we had mentioned right from the beginning, both like Emma mentioned it to her audience, I mentioned it to my audience. It was like, hey, this is probably going to sell out quickly because we have limited spots. The fulfillment process on this challenge is a little bit different. We had to do personality assessments for everybody. We had to do custom macros for everybody. We had to get things uploaded into the app so that everyone had the resources that they needed. And we sat down and we came up with a number. We're like, okay, this is going to be our limit. And once we hit that limit, it sold out. And we got flooded with messages from people for whatever reason that waited. Now, there are certainly instances where somebody may have just not heard, like they were late in getting that information, which is understandable, which is just unfortunate. You know, you're late to the game. You're like, oh shit, I wish I had heard about this sooner. But the vast majority of those people just delayed. They just waited. And it was like, yeah, this is something I want, but I'm not going to do anything about it. But now that it's gone, I really want it. And that's such a human thing. And then, so we got flooded with all these messages. So we decided to open up 100 spots. And we're like, this is it. This is our hard cap. We're going to open 100 more spots. We set the date. We set the time. We opened 100 spots and they went in like 90 minutes. And once again, once those 100 spots were sold out, all these people were like, wait, can you please open more? I didn't get in. And then all like the rest of this week, I've been getting messages. Is there any way you could let me in? Is there any way you could let my friend in? And I appreciate that some people may have just been late to the game, but I have to imagine that a large percentage are just delayers. They're procrastinators. They don't take action when they see something they want. And then once it's gone, they're like, wait a minute, I actually do want to do this. And there's a lesson there. The lesson is to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. Like, you know, when you want something, if you're struggling because you want to lose fat and it's been a process for decades or years, whatever, and you're not where you want to be, you already know that it matters. You already know that it's important to you. What more do you have to think about? Just take action, take advantage of the opportunity. So that's just one. It's just fascinating to me, the divide. And the funny thing is I guess it's not funny, but just another observation is that the people who take action and then inevitably they're the ones that get the result because they took action. They didn't delay. They didn't, you know, sit on the fence for too long. They get the result. And then the people who are the excuse makers are like, oh, I wish I could get results like that. It's like, motherfucker, you could. You had every opportunity. There's no difference. You just didn't do it. Literally no difference. Like, oh, I wish I could look like that. I wish I could get those results. Oh, the person's so lucky. They're so blessed or whatever. No, they just decided that they wanted something and they did it. There's no difference. So the second example was with our beta program where we open up 5 spots and like those 5 spots went immediately. And those people who jump at the opportunity, our original 5, already seeing progress, already loving the process, already like, this is the best decision. Then we opened another 5 and those went quickly. It's just, there's a certain person that is like, the opportunity seat, they're like, I am going to take action on this because I know that I want this thing. And then there's this other side, there's this divide. And then there's the excuse maker of, well, I'm not going to reach out because maybe it's not the right time, or maybe I couldn't afford it, or maybe I couldn't do this, whatever. But then nothing ever gets done and you end up in the same spot and days go by and weeks go by and years go by and you're like, why am I still here? Well, you're still there because you haven't done anything. You haven't taken advantage of opportunities when they've come up. And it's so interesting. And now when we fully launch, so we're sold out of our beta program, but we're going to roll out that program publicly because so far the feedback has been positive enough that I'm confident we can roll it out publicly, which will happen in a few weeks, probably in July. We'll be rolling it out publicly. When we roll it out publicly, we only have 30 spots available. Based on the way that we fulfill on this higher level program, we can only take a total of 30 people. And I'm telling you, it's going to be the same exact situation. There will be 30 people who are action takers, who they're no different. There's nothing special about them. They just simply know that they want to make a change. They know it's important. They know why it matters. They know what they value. They will go get it. They will take advantage. And then there will be a lot of people who are excuse makers, who delay, who procrastinate, who don't do it. And then they'll be seeing the results and wondering, why am I not like that person? But you are, you just made a different decision. But it really is fascinating. It's just the way that the human mind works and the way that we convince ourselves to remain in the same place. And then we get frustrated that we're still in the same place. And then our brain talks us out of making a change. It's just a fascinating thing to witness from a 30,000 foot view. But I just thought I would share because sometimes it helps to have perspective, to hear things like that. Sometimes it can identify or help you identify patterns or ways that your brain tries to play tricks on you or things that you might be telling yourself that aren't true. So again, if we can create a little bit of awareness, then we can address the root of the issue and potentially make a change. But I'm here to talk about macros. And actually, I want to talk about the top 5 mistakes that I see with tracking macros. Now, understand that tracking macros, I've said this a million times, so I'm going to say it 1,000,001. It's just one tool in a very large toolbox, or what should be a very large toolbox. If your coach is a one-trick pony, or if your program is a one-trick pony, meaning they can only coach with macros and they have no other skill set, that is a major red flag. I used to work for one of those companies, and I can tell you that 99% probably 100% of the people failed. I say 99% because there were the rare people that made progress, but ultimately over a long enough time frame, they also lost that progress. So I'm not sure if anybody has ever been successful with that program long-term. And I'm saying like years. Anyway, because it was so focused on just macros and nothing personalized, nothing, no other tricks, just a calorie calculator and that's it. And so it's important to remind, because if you bounce around to different Facebook communities, groups, look at Instagram, things like that, you might start to believe that tracking macros are the only way. Like that's the only way to see progress. It's not. It's one way to see progress. It's one way to create awareness around what you're eating. It's one way to have an idea of how much you're consuming and how those calories are breaking down into macros. Just so that we're all on the same page, tracking macros, it's just a form of calorie counting. It's a little bit more specific because all calories are broken down into three macronutrients, protein, carbs, and fats. The only other place that you can get calories from is alcohol. So when you're tracking macros, you're effectively looking at targets of total calories, and then that's broken down into total grams of protein, total grams of carbs, and total grams of fat. It's a simple calculation. Protein and carbs each have 4 calories per gram. Fat has 9 calories per gram. And so that's the formula. If you're like, well, I'm tracking macros, but not calories, you're tracking both, because you, if you're tracking macros, you're also hitting calorie totals. You just haven't done the math. Protein and carbs, 4 calories per gram. Fat, 9 calories per gram. I think another important thing is, just because you're not aware of how much you're eating doesn't mean that those calories aren't happening. Like, it's like spending. A lot of people are like, well, I don't even want to see what I'm spending, because then it's like it doesn't exist. No, it still exists. You're just not privy to it. It's the same thing with calories. Oh, well, I don't even want to know what I'm eating, because then, you know, it's real, right? Like, if you want to make a change, you might have to be more specific in your approach and start to create awareness around your nutritional habits and how much you're actually consuming. But there's also the dark side. Not everyone should be tracking, because it can be a trigger for some negative behaviors. Just to rattle off, in my opinion, the positives or the benefits can be, and I'm talking about for tracking macros, the positives, the benefits can be identifying certain eating patterns and tendencies that you might have, learning to read food labels. I think that's an extremely important one and often overlooked. Understanding portion sizes. So you might start to track and realize that a 4-ounce portion of chicken looks very different than you would have thought. Or you might notice what a 4-ounce serving of chicken looks like, but then you go to a restaurant and you're like, oh wow, they just gave me like 10 ounces, because you see the difference. Like, it can create awareness around portion sizes. Or, you know, you look at, like peanut butter. That's always the first one. When you look at a serving of peanut butter and you realize how depressingly small it is, and then you're like, wow, so when I was taking those spoonfuls of peanut butter, I was really eating a lot of calories. And that can be an unfortunate lesson. Learning how certain foods make you feel. So you pay attention, like if I'm eating low carb, I feel really low energy and my sleep is poor and I'm not recovering well and I don't have, my performance is struggling, like things like that. You start to identify how certain foods make you feel. Identifying blind spots, that's another key benefit to tracking, where you might learn very quickly that you're eating too little protein or you're way too low on fats. Fats are important for hormone health. So if you're seeing some issues and you feel like you've got some stuff going on internally, there might be some hormonal imbalances. It could be that you're very low on fats. That could be one of the reasons for it. And then just like awareness around how much you can actually consume without gaining weight. Most people that I talk to who are typically more of the advanced, like know enough about nutrition to be dangerous, typically they believe their maintenance is a lot lower than it actually is. And when they start eating an adequate amount, what they can and should be eating for maintenance, they're often pleasantly surprised. Like, wow, I didn't know that my maintenance was actually this high, which is a good thing. That means we've got, you know, more room to work with. We've got, you know, the probability is on our side that you're going to see progress. On the flip side, there are certainly some negatives. There can be some negatives to tracking macros. Again, I'm just helping to understand, like, maybe this isn't for you, helping to understand maybe this is for you. That's why I'm presenting both sides here. The negatives can be becoming too obsessed with tracking, something that I have been a victim to and certainly guilty of, becoming way too obsessed with tracking. Perfectionist tendencies, without a doubt, tracking can create the desire to be absolutely perfect down to the last gram. Becoming a hermit because it's hard to track while being social, another thing. Basically, putting this whole list together that I used to be. I used to skip out on social events. I would cancel on friends. I would tell my family I was sick, anything to avoid being social because I couldn't hit my macros perfectly. Thinking that the numbers are the only thing that matter. Like I mentioned, the program that I used to coach for, it's just a numbers game. It was no personal attention. It's just the numbers were the only thing that mattered. And that's why most people were unsuccessful. Ignoring food quality for the sake of hitting macros. I can't tell you how much I've seen this. Well, I had 50 grams of carbs left, so I just ate a bunch of Rice Krispie treats, or I just ate a bunch of Swedish fish or candy because I had to hit my 50 grams. I wasn't that hungry, so I just stuffed myself with some candy. Like, in what world does that make sense? If you're not hungry, you're not hungry. Who cares what the numbers say? Ignoring your body for the sake of hitting numbers. That's another one. I was ravenously hungry, but I had already hit my macros for the day, so I can't eat. Yes, you can eat. You're choosing not to because you're letting the numbers rule your life and rule your body. If your body is screaming, you should probably listen. And then becoming too dependent on MyFitnessPal, which is like you can't live life without being married to MyFitnessPal. You almost get anxiety or social anxiety or you know, things like that. There's a lack of balance. There's a lack of flexibility. You feel lost without tracking. Those are all some of the negative consequences that can occur in certain individuals. It can be a trigger. I don't believe that it's the tool that's the issue. I think that it's the individual. There's some stuff that has to be sorted out. Like I'm a perfect example. I was, I experienced all of those things and I was able to overcome all of those things. It had nothing to do with macros. The act of tracking macros has not changed. I changed. I improved my relationship with food. I improved my relationship with myself. I improved my mindset. And so I changed and then I was able to use macros again in a positive way. And now I take a lot of breaks. Right now I'm going through a period where I'm in maintenance. I'm not tracking anything and it's going really well. So no issues there. So that's why I always come back to the fact that, you know, it can be useful, but it's not for everybody. And if you understand some of the pros and cons, then hopefully you can make an informed decision. My feeling is that everybody that is not in the camp of eating disorder, disordered eating, that sort of thing. Everybody that's not in that camp would benefit from at least 30 days of tracking. 30 days out of your entire life. That's my minimum suggestion. And the reason is very simple, because it can be the most enlightening experience. And it's such a short period of time. Like if you can't take a month out of your life to do this thing, then I have to question some of the thoughts and decisions that you're making, because it's a month, it's 30 days. What does that mean in the grand scheme of things? If it's going to help you, even if it doesn't help you, even if it's a complete waste of tracking, who cares? It's 30 days. It's not going to ruin anything. You'll be fine, I promise. But it can be really enlightening, and creating more awareness is a beautiful thing. I think that that's the greatest gift that you can ever be given, is the gift of awareness. So it's really useful to understand like how much you're consuming on average, on a daily basis, a weekly basis. So that's why I say 30 days, because then we have some weekends in there. There might be some you know, birthday parties. There might be a social event or two. 30 days gives you a really accurate depiction of what's going on. And so, there are some things that people do poorly that I see frequently. that I wanted to bring up. And this is my top five macro tracking mistakes in no particular order. Because if you're going to track, you should have a solid game plan in place for how to do it properly. Because you, a lot of the issues that I mentioned, sometimes they can occur just because it's like user error. Like you think you have to do something which is causing a negative consequence, but you don't actually have to be doing that thing. Right? Like here's a perfect example. Number one, trying to hit targets before even knowing what you're currently doing. So somebody jumps in. I actually saw this on a Facebook group. I'm not going to name the group. I'm not going to name the program. I know that it's a macro-based program. I know that they're very cookie cutter. I know that they're not the best, but I'm not going to say the name. They do have macros in their title. That's all. I'll leave it at that. Anyway, somebody was like, oh my God, this is impossible. How could I ever hit these targets that I received from my coach? Here's how you know that it's not a real coaching program. Anytime they're like, how can I hit these targets I got from my coach? And they're posting that in the Facebook community. It's not real coaching. Because what a quality coach does is they take you from where you are and they make a very slight change to where you need to be. So the biggest mistake is trying to hit targets before you even know where you're currently at. Like the most important first step is to know your starting point. I always use this analogy, but if I am going to put directions into a GPS, the directions are irrelevant if it doesn't produce the accurate starting point, like where I am right now. How can you give me directions if you don't know where I am? You have to know where I'm starting. You have to know where I'm going. And so a lot of these programs, they don't even ask what your current nutrition looks like or what, how many calories you're currently eating. They don't even ask that. They just start with numbers and you're like, well, shit, I guess I'm just going to give it a whirl. And then the negative consequences, you're like, this is overwhelming. This is frustrating. This is too stressful. And macros are not for me. No, it was just that program is not for you. Had nothing to do with macros. So before you jump to targets, start tracking, don't change anything. Just continue doing what you're currently doing. Track. My ideal time frame, like I mentioned, is 30 days, but I understand that some people want to just get the ball rolling. So 3 to 7 days, include a weekday, include a weekend. Don't change anything. I cannot stress that enough. A lot of people, once they start paying attention to what they're eating, they're like, oh, well, I better eat really clean, quote unquote clean, because now I'm paying attention. No, just do what you would normally do and track it. That way you have an accurate starting point, and then we can start to set gradual targets. Another thing, this is number two, taking leaps instead of baby steps. So now you have your starting point, and a lot of people will go right from their starting point to their finish point. Meaning, let's say you track for 3 to 7 days and you realize that you're eating 50 grams of protein per day. And that's really low. You're like, well, I should be eating, let's just say 150 grams of protein per day. It doesn't make sense to try to go from 50 to 150. That's going to be really difficult. Go from 50 to 60. Go from 50 to 70. You know, keep it short or keep it attainable. Keep it close to your target, like where you're starting. The bigger the jump, the harder it is to achieve. And the more your body is going to kind of fight back because it's not used to that. It's not used to that leap. Even if it might be the best thing for you, take your time. I see this with people coming out of low carb. They'll go from very, very low carb. And then they're like, well, somebody told me I should eat carbs, which is a good idea. It's you know, great. But you got to take this gradually. Otherwise, your body... And here's another thing, right? I'll have people that are saying, well, I don't handle carbs well. Carbs make me bloated. And it's like, well, do they really? Maybe. But most of the time, it's because you either went from like zero carbs to all the carbs, or the types of carbs you're eating make you bloated. That's the other part. Like, it might be that pasta and bread is making you bloated, but if you were to eat like oats and jasmine white rice and sweet potatoes and, you know, stuff like that, beans, lentils, quinoa, that stuff might not make you bloated. That's why I say one of the benefits of macros is paying attention to how certain foods make you feel. Don't just stick with one carb source and think, oh, well, carbs make me bloated. Did you try fruit? Are you getting in enough veggies, getting in enough fiber? You know, there's more to it than just, oh, I went from zero carbs to 100 carbs and I'm bloated, so carbs make me bloated. Gradual is the way to go there. And that will give you a better indication of how things actually make you feel if you're moving in a gradual pace. Number three, mistake, using exact numbers instead of ranges. This is another thing that can lead to perfectionism. Well, I got my numbers and I have to hit exactly 57 grams of fat. And, you know, you'll have people who are like measuring to the, like to the gram, and they're taking a little bit away. It's like, well, that would have put me at 60 grams of fat and I need to be at 57 grams of fat. Like, trust me, that 3 gram difference is not going to change anything. And sometimes just seeing the targets delivered that way, it creates the perfectionist tendency. So avoid that. Give yourself a range. Give yourself a range of calories. Instead of saying I need to eat 2,100 calories, say I'm going to try to eat between 2,000 and 2,200 calories. Instead of saying I need to hit 120 grams of protein, say I would like to hit between 110 and 130. Right? Give yourself a 10 gram range on protein and carbs and a 5 gram range on fats. On average, again, even in a, on an off day or a day that you're just not, you don't have it that day for whatever reason, it's okay if you're off. It's okay if it's not perfect. It's okay if you're not within that range. If you're 20 grams over on carbs, it's okay. You can take a little bit away from fats, or you can just roll with it and do better the next day. It's not a big deal. Number four mistake is measuring instead of weighing. This one might not seem like it makes a difference. It actually makes a huge difference. Using measuring cups and measuring spoons and things like that, very inaccurate. It's surprising because they have to put food labels, have to put their serving size with the weighed and the measured units. So you'll typically see something for like oatmeal, you'll see that the serving size is like a quarter of a cup. And then it will also say 40 grams. So if you were to take a serving size, quarter of a cup of oatmeal and just dump it in the bowl and make it, you're probably eating a lot more than you think you are. If you were to weigh it, and the weight is the more accurate measurement, if you were to weigh it, that would show you what a serving size should look like. So I've done this with a number of things just to test it out and see how funny it is. I've seen situations where it's double, like literally double. And what I mean by that is it'll say like serving size is 1 cup of whatever. And then it'll say the weight is, let's say 100 grams. I'm just making up numbers to illustrate the point. But I'll take the cup and I'll pour it in the bowl to measure it. And it'll be like 200 grams. And like, that's literally double, meaning that if you were to just use the measuring cup, you'd be eating twice the amount of calories that you actually thought. Even try it with stuff like Built Bar. Built Bar serving size, I think, is somewhere around 50 grams. I'm going off of memory. I haven't done this in a while. I've weighed Built Bars that were like 37 grams. I've also weighed Built Bars that were like 60 grams. So the weight is always going to be more accurate. And I also think that it saves time just to use the food scale. I don't have to ever use the measuring cups at all. I can just use my food scale. I can, you know, put whatever it is on the scale, put the bowl on the scale, zero it out, weigh what I need to weigh, and I'm golden. I think that it's much quicker. Number five, using a generic calculator instead of a coach. This is like the classic, I don't know why macros don't work for me, right? It's like, well, I plugged in my numbers to MyFitnessPal and they told me to eat 1200 calories. No shit. It's because they tell everybody to eat 1200 calories. I signed up for this coaching program and they gave me these macros. It's like, oh, that's cool. Like, did they ask you any questions about like the stress in your life? And did they do a personality assessment? Did they ask about, your personal preferences? Did they ask about your diet history? Did they do a metabolic assessment to see how things would respond? No, they actually didn't do any of those things. Well, got it. So it's not that macros don't work for you. It's that the program you signed up for sucks shit. Listen, there's all of these cheap programs. You can spend $50 a month. You could spend $100 a month. You can cut corners. You can take the cheap path. you're not going to make progress. You're not going to make long-term progress. You're going to end up spending that money and then being frustrated. And here's the sad part. Here's the sad part. Most people connect that with coaching in general. That's not coaching. That's just data insertion. Like they don't, there's no person that even needs to be there. I think they just put a person in place to click buttons like that. Full transparency. When I was working at the previous company that I worked for, at this point, it was like 5 years ago. When I was working there, I was a button pusher. I wasn't actually a coach. They didn't need me. They had a formula. Everything was formulaic. They didn't need people. They only needed people to click the button and hit send so that the person on the other end felt like they had a coach. And then the sad part is, from the individual's perspective, and I can tell you this from personal experience, I would extrapolate that out to all coaching. Like, well, I can't spend the money on coaching because it doesn't work. No, the cheap shit doesn't work. Like, there's a reason why real coaching comes with a premium investment. Like that, it's no mistake. It's done intentionally. It's because more resources go into it and it solidifies your results. Like, I will all day, I'll pay more money to guarantee my results than try to cut corners. And that's just me. But it's really sad because the generic calculators create this idea that coaching doesn't work when in reality, or macros don't work, right? We either blame coaching as a whole or we blame macros as a whole when in reality, it's just that program as a whole, whatever the generic bullshit that you signed up for. And you know, sometimes it's difficult to hear the difference in price and be like, well, I'm just going to go with this cheap shit. But you can figure it out right away. Right away, you can figure it out if there is no true personalization, if they don't get to understand your life, your work life, your stress levels, if they don't ask for biofeedback, if they don't ask for you know, certain things like personal preferences and your social life. And like, there's a deep understanding that has to happen. Your diet history, your current metabolic state. Like, if they don't ask these questions and figure these things out, then they're just throwing shit at the wall and hoping it sticks. And that's not a very good way to go about it. It's like, we're just going to fire off all these different numbers and hope that somebody sees progress. It doesn't work like that. The human metabolism is way too dynamic. And there's this thing between your ears called your brain that is more important than just the numbers. So if we're not addressing what's upstairs, what's, you know, going on in your mind, then we're leaving all of the results on the table, which is why they don't work, which is why investing in real coaching is always the way to go. In my opinion, I'm going to throw in a bonus one right here. Number six, selective tracking. This one's funny. It's like the classic, I ate everything, so I'm not going to track it. And if I don't track it, those calories don't count. Yes, they actually do. You know, it's like I picked some food off of my kid's plate and then I had a glass of wine and I only intended to have one glass of wine, but then I had the whole bottle and I don't want to track a whole bottle of wine and I don't want to track all the snacks I ate afterwards. So I'm just going to say, fuck it. And I'm done with tracking. And you're like, I can't track because it doesn't allow me to live my life. Well, yes, it does. You're just choosing to view it that way. Now, I don't think that you have to track every single thing. And I don't even think that you have to track every single day, but I do think that it's valuable to take one of those days when you're going out to eat, if you're at a restaurant, or you have a overindulgent day, or you're snacking a lot, just put in what you think you ate. Take your best guess and put everything in, the restaurant meal, the snacks, the alcohol, all of it. Put it all in there. Just one time, try this, because you'll either realize, number one, it wasn't as bad as you thought. Or number two, it was much worse than you thought. Either way, it's a win, because if it's better than you thought, you'll stop beating yourself up. You'll stop berating yourself. If it's worse than you thought, you'll be like, holy shit, I should probably stop doing that, which is great. Either way, awareness, it's great. So highly recommend you do that at least once just to see. Then what you can do is this really cool strategy where if you have an idea of how much you like to consume on a week, like let's just say you're like really keen on having a fuck it day every week, whatever, Saturday. Saturday is your fuck it day. and you've tracked a Saturday fuck it day before, and you know that a Saturday fuck it day is 5,000 calories. Amazing. Now, when you're tracking calories, here's what you can do. Take the weekly total, right? Take the weekly total. Let's say you're eating 2,000 calories per day. That's your target. 2,000 calories per day comes out to 14,000 calories per week, right? Weekly averages are much more important than day to day. So you look at the whole week. The whole week, you have 14,000 calories allocated. You know that you want to fuck it Saturday every single day. I mean, every single week. Can't have a fuck it day every day. So you take that 5,000 calorie estimate and you remove it from the 14,000 total. So now we're left with 9,000 calories that we can then spread out over 6 days. So real simple math will tell us that you get to eat 1,500 calories per day, 6 days a week, and you get that one fuck it day of 5,000 calories, which you don't have to track. Very easy. So selective tracking can be a big problem and a big mistake because it prevents you from seeing the big picture. It prevents you from having that awareness as to what's going on. And it prevents you from using this strategy. This is a great strategy for coaches too. If you have clients who they don't want to track on the weekends, great. Just get an estimate of what they do on the weekends. It's not going to be perfect. It doesn't matter. We don't need to be perfect. We just need to be close enough. Get an accurate estimate of what the weekend looks like, remove that from their weekly total, and then divide for the rest of the days, and there's your prescription. Now, we have to pay attention to how your body responds. We have to pay attention to biofeedback. Making the adjustments is more important, in my opinion, than setting the initial prescription. So you can get an initial prescription anywhere, which may be helpful, it may not be helpful, but what's really helpful is listening to your body, seeing how things respond, seeing how you respond, seeing how you feel, paying attention to hunger, energy, cravings, mood, sleep, stress, digestion, performance, recovery, paying attention to those biofeedback markers, and then knowing how to make the adjustments from there. And that's why you can't shortcut the process. That's why you can't find the cheapest option. That's why most of those other programs fall flat and why they typically have a massive amount of turnover. Like, they'll get people who can track and stay, you know, just for the sake of tracking. They're like, well, yeah, I'm making better food choices because I have awareness and I'm tracking, and that in and of itself is helping me. But then when it comes to the actual personalized coaching art, they fall flat and most people end up back at square one. Don't let that happen to you. Pay attention. Understand where you're getting your information from. Remember, run it through the filters of bullshit. So listen to the words. That's number one. Look at the data. That's number two. And then ask yourself, what are the second, third, and fourth order consequences? And then what? If I do this, then what? Oh, I'm saving, you know, let's say I'm saving $500 a month by doing this cheaper program. Okay, but and then what? And then I might not be where I want to be because it's a cheaper program. It might not create the success that I want. Then I'm going to be out that money and I'm still going to have the problem that I want to get solved. And I'm still going to need to spend money on that problem. So in the end, I'm actually going to spend more money if I take this shortcut. So maybe I should just make the investment now. Those are some of the ways to filter through bullshit. Go through the words, go through the data, then ask yourself that last question. And then what? What are the second, third, fourth order consequences of this decision? And then hopefully you can make a more informed decision. Hopefully that is helpful in your approach to macros or to not tracking macros. Oh, as always, let me know if you have any questions. Hit me up on Instagram. I'll take any feedback I can get. I appreciate you guys, and I will talk to you all very soon.